when the shift boss hits that button, then you'd better look alive, 'cause the lumber comes a-rolling like the bees out of a hive. And you'll feel that sweat come pouring as each muscle screams with pain. And you'll wonder if it's worth it working on the long green chain.
I'm Mark Laren Young, and welcome back to the Green Chain Podcast. Today we've got a special guest host, Ian Ferguson, Leacock Award-winning author of Village of the Small Houses and co-author with his brother Will Ferguson of the bestseller How to Be a Canadian. And Ian's got a very special guest today, me. And we're talking about my film, The Green Chain.
Hi, folks. I'm Ian Ferguson, and I'm talking to Mark Laren Young, the writer, producer, and director of The Green Chain, which has done something very unusual for Canadian cinema. It's actually being released in actual cinemas. Mark, you must be over the moon.
It's pretty amazing. And it's funny. It's been such a long ride to get here, and now that I'm here, I'm going, we need more time! We need more time!
Okay, now the film has actually been finished for over a year. It's done the festival circuits already?
Yep.
Now, where has it been?
We had our world premiere at the Montreal World Film Festival. Then we played the Vancouver International Film Festival, which is home, so it was fantastic. Our American premiere was in Cleveland, of all places.
Cleveland? A film about logging and environmentalism premiered in Cleveland, Ohio?
Okay. What's so weird about this to me is, as much as I loved the movie before, I was floored after seeing it in Cleveland in a place there are no trees.
Right. No, okay. I've been to Cleveland.
It's amazing. It is.
People in Cleveland long to go to Sudbury and see some forests.
Yeah, it's so disconnected from nature. They have a lake that caught fire. For real, I'm not making this up. They have a lake that caught fire.
So here's a movie, The Green Chain, about logging, about the environment, about trees.
They thought it was about them.
Really?
Because it's also about a dying community.
Wow.
And the connection to the film there was visceral. And people, the question and answer period lasted into the lobby, into the Hard Rock Cafe afterwards. People just wanted to find out more about this world. They were so connected to it. It was amazing. Then I showed it in Maui. Same thing. In Maui, it's apparently about sugarcane.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Apparently in Maui, I've written a movie about sugarcane. And in Barcelona, this was so cool. We got invited to this film festival in Barcelona.
And you won. You're an award-winning film now.
It's an award-winning film. And it's a really wild award. It's a very heavy award.
Okay. What is the award exactly? Just for the record.
Oh.
I'm assuming it's something like bestest movie, but...
Oh, God, I actually can't say it.
Okay.
So if you want to know the name of the award, you're going to have to look it up on my website. It's very heavy. Okay, it's a huge... Oh, physically...
So when you said heavy award, you weren't talking emotionally heavy, like they gave me an award for...
Oh.
The actual statue's heavy.
You know how Jean Chrétien warded off an intruder with the...
Right.
With the Inuit sculpture?
Yeah.
Okay. This sculpture... This would have just brained the intruder.
This is heavy.
This is serious metal. It costs $300 to ship back from Europe. worth every bloody cent. But what was so wild was we weren't in competition. I can't remember why, but for whatever reason, we weren't eligible to be in competition,
right,
because most of the films are true documentaries. I think that was the rationale. So we were a special showing. They had a couple of movies. One of the others was Battle in Seattle, which is another Canadian film. And we were shown out of competition, but they thought we should be in the movie or in the festival. And what they had, well, I'll tell you what happened. Basically, I showed up at the awards night because I'd met a whole bunch of filmmakers from around the world and thought, I'll go cheer for them. This would be really nice. I'll cheer for all these nice people. But since I don't speak Catalan, I thought I'll sit at the back of the theater since I won't understand a word anybody's saying.
It's always dangerous when awards are being given out if you're at the back of the room, because it takes you that much longer to work your way to the front to pick up your
award. Oh, no. Somebody from the festival comes up and says, Mark, you should sit closer to the front. And I said, why? And they said something about they might introduce you. They might introduce. And I thought, oh, they're going to introduce all the foreign filmmakers,
right,
who, you know, they've spent a lot of money to fly us out.
It's like the Lions Club. Here's the people who traveled here from...
Oh, pretty much. Yes. Here's somebody who's traveled the furthest. I wasn't even the one who traveled the furthest. They'd had people from all across the world. And, you know, they said, sit up front. They might introduce you. I went, great. And they start to talk, and suddenly I hear, blah, 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 the Green Chain.
Applause.
And so somebody's going, and they're like, you know, moving their arm and waving to me. I'm like, that's very nice. You know, and somebody's going, stand up. So I stand up and I wave, and I'm sitting back down. They go, no, no, go. And they're saying this. There was this wonderful filmmaker from Argentina. And you know how there's this joke that American tourists are convinced that if they speak louder to Europeans,
Right. Absolutely. They
will understand English? Yeah, that if you just louder, yell at somebody in Germany, they will totally understand English? This wonderful filmmaker from Argentina, we'd been done the tourist thing the day before, he was convinced that if he yelled at me, I could speak Spanish. And so he's yelling at me and yelling at me and yelling at me. And I'm sitting next to somebody who's insisting that I have to go stand up. And I'm just,
I'm really
embarrassed because this is a full theater. And I'm thinking, why am I standing up? I'm not in the running for any awards. You know, we're not eligible in competition. And I stand up and this short, you know, distinguished fellow gives me a hug and hands me this huge trophy. And I go, muchas gracias. Thank you all.
Well, what I find really interesting is that was a festival for documentary films.
Yeah.
The Green Chain is not actually a documentary. It's completely scripted.
Yes.
Some of the best professional actors in Canada are in it.
Yep.
And yet a lot of people, even after having seen the film, walk out thinking it's a true documentary.
Oh.
I mean, it's a terrific film. I've seen it a couple of times now. But what I find interesting about it is even knowing some of the actors in it, it's easy to fall into the belief that this is an actual documentary.
What's so funny about this is that we did a crew screening very, very early past of this movie. I thought it was finished at the time. I was so proud, and I thought it was finished. And about 15 minutes in, I'm going, oh, it's not done yet, is it? we did a crew screening, and Kennedy Goodkey, who was my assistant director on several of the shoots, said afterwards, he said, you do realize that this doesn't play like a real documentary. I said, yeah, no. I said there are some documentaries like it. There are some Talking Head style documentaries that are similar. There's one about Hitler's secretary, which is just 70 minutes, one person on camera. And I can name a few others, but it's not a proper documentary style. I said, yeah, not. And he said, so you're not going to fool anyone. I said, not trying to fool anyone.
Right.
I said, this is just the style of the movie. And, you know, so we talked about it. I said, I don't believe I don't believe that a single person who will goes in to see this movie will believe it's a real documentary because, you know, you buy a ticket for a movie, you know stuff going into a movie. So I said, I'm not expecting to fool anyone. I said, but you know, when it shows up on TV, I'm hoping that they'll buy in for the first two or three monologues.
Well, I think part of it is a compliment to the script. It's an incredibly well-written script, very tight.
Yeah.
It's elliptical. It turns back in on itself at the end. Scenes that happen early on make more sense at the end. So there's all that going forward. But also, I think you did a terrific job with the actors. There's such a wonderful level of performance that it's easy to fall in and believe that these are real people who just happen to be talking in a very profound and well-written way.
Well, part of it is that when I was sitting and editing, choosing takes, I chose the takes that looked least acted. And there are certain things that you do not see in a script. Like with our logger, there's a moment early on when he coughs. And so my editor said, so you want to lose that one, right? I went, uh-uh.
Yeah.
That's why I want it.
Because it seems so natural.
Yeah.
And the little mistakes, it's not slick. And the little mistakes give it an authenticity.
Oh, I've got some wonderfully slick takes. And if anybody wants to see them, you know,
That's for the DVD.
I made sure that it's like that thing about the Persian rug where you've got to have the flaw.
Yep.
I can tell you what the flaw is in every one of those scenes. And I never chose the perfect take. We have some perfect takes. I wanted the take that has something that's a little off kilter. Because you don't put that off-kilter take in a movie.
No, in a slick Hollywood, and I use air quotes around the word Hollywood production, no, you try to rub all that stuff out. But I think that's sort of the rough edges of it do add to, like I say, an authenticity. Now, I think anybody listening to this is, before you could build a spoon, somebody had to have the idea of a spoon.
Yes.
And come up with that concept and then make a spoon so we could all have soup. I'm really fascinated with where to write and produce and direct a feature film anywhere in the world, let alone in Canada. Very, very difficult task, daunting task. When did you first come up with it as an idea for a feature?
I didn't.
You didn't?
No. Yeah, I like that look of surprise. No, the original idea a million years ago was to do a collection of these stories about trees for CBC Radio. I was working with a producer named John Giuliani.
Oh, the great John Giuliani.
Oh, man. Yes, I could rave for hours about John. John was my mentor and so much more.
You're very, very fortunate. I mean, he's a brilliant, wonderful, the late, great John Giuliani. And
just an insanely inspiring man. And I look at the work I'm proudest of, and so much of it was work that I wrote for John and to do with John. And we were doing radio plays in the early 90s. We did a radio play called Dim Sum Diaries, you know, and that was wildly successful and wildly controversial. Yeah. And when we were doing that, John, like before that ever aired, John and I were saying, let's do another series of five monologues. And Dim Sum was five interconnected monologues.
Right. Structurally similar to The Green Chaser.
Absolutely. Structurally similar, where it was five monologues. The story's interlinked if you paid attention. Not as cleanly as interlinked in this, but the story's interlinked. And we said, let's do this again. Let's do trees. Trees define BC. If, you know, BC shouldn't have a state bird, it shouldn't have a state tree.
Right.
It should just be a tree, and really there should be a logger in the background, and you know, if somebody's hugging the tree, I think that's your BC
flag. So it should be, you should have a tree with an activist chained to it and a latte and an umbrella, and that would be Vancouver.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah, but you've got to have somebody cutting the tree. No,
right.
The latte and the umbrella is Vancouver. The rest of BC, tree, trees, 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 trees. And so we started doing this, and we started pitching it, and because Dim Sum had, you know, been a controversial ride, he was like, you know, can you guys do something besides your five monologue shtick? But John and I never surrendered. We pitched this under, like, a dozen different titles over the years. My favorite was called Shoot the Spotted Owl, because Jack Monroe gave this great quote saying, you know, I tell my men if they see a spotted owl, shoot it.
Right.
And I love that quote. So I wanted to call it Shoot the Spotted Owl. That made people even more nervous about it. And so then we started going, oh, it won't work for radio. Let's do it on TV. And basically every year from 91 until almost John's death, we would go to somebody and go, let us do our tree stories.
Right.
And we were just obsessed with doing them. And then John and I did a stage play called Articles of Faith about same-sex blessing in the Anglican Church. And I finally said to John, okay, we've wanted to do tree stories forever. Articles of Faith was such an amazing experience. It reminded me how much I loved working with John. And I thought, must just bite it and bite the bullet and write the tree monologues. And we'll just do them. Maybe we'll
however,
do them.
However, it doesn't matter.
However,
how.
It does not matter. It does not matter if we do them for stage. It does not matter if we do them for radio. It doesn't matter if we do them for TV. We'll just do them. And John passed away. And there was a day in his honor, Savage God Day. And I actually got the honor of writing the proclamation for Savage God Day. And part of that proclamation was basically, if you're an artist, go out and do something that scares you.
Right.
Because that was the best way to honor John. You know, the best way to honor that man is to do some work that, you know, made you nervous. Do some work that, you know, push yourself the edge. So what I did was, my Savage God Day assignment was to write this unfinished piece.
Right, to finish the tree monologues.
To finish the tree monologues and the tree stories. And I wrote the script, handed the script to John's wife, Donna Wong Giuliani, and said, you know, no one will ever produce this because no one in the entire world is as crazy as John. Donna read the script and said, I am as crazy as my husband. I will produce this. We're making a movie.
Fantastic.
And you're directing.
Even better.
Yes. And it was funny because at one point I met with Kirk Tugas, who was our director of photography. And he said, what's your vision? I said, if you want a grand scheme, I've got none. He said, what do you mean? I said, I'm doing it the way John and I talked about it.
Right.
I said that John and I talked about how we do this on screen for years. It never occurred to us we could get funding as a movie. Like that just...
Of course. Well, what I find interesting about it is it actually makes perfect sense as an independent film because it's very containable because you're dealing with one camera, one actor. For the most part, that's what you're dealing with is an actor being interviewed or talking to the camera and then to the audience. I find the most interesting thing from having seen it with audiences is the range of reactions you get. It's absolutely impossible at the end of the movie to pick sides and decide what side you, the filmmaker, is on. And I think that causes problems with an awful lot of people. Is there's people that come in and going, oh, this is an anti-Loggy movie, yay. And get disappointed when they see how sympathetically the people in the logging industry are portrayed. And there's also people going, this will teach those tree-hugging hippies a thing or two. And then when they see how sensitively... And I think that's a really interesting thing. What's... Much like a lot of your work, it's a bit controversial. Do you recall any specific discussions and Q&A sessions at festivals or reactions from people?
What I've loved talking to people, one is that... Almost everybody has told me that they've found empathy for whatever side they didn't agree with.
Excellent.
Okay. And that's been astonishing. And that's been really thrilling because that was what I was hoping for. That, you know, there's gonna be something that you disagree with in here. There's going to be something that you agree with in here. And hopefully it's not the something that you were expecting. And the other thing that has thrilled me is that, I mean, I've now traveled with it to a bunch of festivals in a bunch of cities. A
bunch of countries.
In a bunch of countries. Yeah. And what's been so amazing, if I sat down and polled people, I don't know the mathematical way of saying this, but basically, if I said, name your 7 favorites, okay, in order, they're like never the same.
Right, of course.
I mean, we have champions for every single one of those characters and every single one of those performances. We've got reviews that have keyed in on one specific performance. And one will go, Gillian Fargy's the waitress. Awesome. And Gillian's won a Leo Award for playing this role.
Or somebody else is Babs Shula.
I've got other people who are, Babs Shula's the best. There's a wonderful review the Vancouver Review did, raving about Tom O'Pennicott as the firefighter, as the emotional core of the movie. I know all sorts of people are like August Schellenberg, who, you know, was nominated for an Emmy in Sitting Bull. Augie's their favorite. And you walk through and people go, no, it's Scott McNeil's Logger. It's Brendan Fletcher as the tree sitter.
Well, I think that's what I find really interesting about it as a film is that it's not a polemic, despite the subject matter. And despite what people's perceptions of you as an artist might be, is that it's not. It's a drama. It's just you've told it in a particular way. The structure of it is as if it's a mockumentary or a documentary.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that people can come into it, because if you're watching it in a big audience, it's like there's things that the entire audience will respond to, and then there's things that only portions of the audience are responding to, depending on their political point of view. Do you find that a good thing, ultimately?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so now it's opened, it's in the movie theaters, we don't have to go to a festival to see it, we can actually go down to a cinema in our hometown and pay our $10 or $12, get a big box of popcorn, and watch the movie. What do you think you'd like people to feel when they're walking out of the theater? They've just sat through The Green Chain.
I would love it if they went out and started talking about it. I'd love it if it got them talking about what's happening in these communities, if it got them looking at something that they haven't looked at before. To me, the stuff I'm proudest of is the stuff that you're still talking about afterwards. And I remember getting this beautiful email. I wrote a play called Shylock, which, again, John Giuliani directed, and John Giuliani was the one who put on stage. And I got this beautiful email from somebody saying, I saw your play 6 months ago. My wife and I are still arguing about it. I'm like, yes! That's fantastic. One night after Shylock, went into a cafe, and there were 4 people, and 2 of them were smiling and so happy to see me, and 2 of them looked at me and gave me, like, the evil eye. I just stink eye. And, like, what's this about? And the guy who was smiling at me said, we just came from Shylock, which I was starting to suspect. And he said, we started the evening as friends. We have no idea how the evening is going to end. And I'm like, too cool. Like, not that I want to break up their friendship, but the fact that the four of them were out, and this was already an hour and a half after the show, and they were still going at it. Like,
well,
awesome.
I think that's a thing that you will get, because the film, I think it's important to emphasize to make people aware that it's entertaining.
Yeah.
First and foremost, it's a vastly entertaining movie. There's funny bits and sad bits and profound bits and all that. But I think that what I found interesting about watching it was that I had different opinions on different times on viewing it, too, on what my favorite bits were, or what my, you know, various political agenda was after watching it. One of the questions that's in the film that I think is a good one to maybe... wrap up this interview, and thanks very much for talking to me about The Green Chain. And folks listening, rush out to your local movie theater and see this 5, maybe 12 times. How do you feel about trees?
I love trees. There's no other answer I can give you. I love trees, and to see all of the different ways that different people can love trees, you got to check out the movie.
Mark Laren Young, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ian. Big fun. Thank you, Ian Ferguson. And thank you for checking out the Green Chain podcast. And I hope you'll check out my movie, The Green Chain. For details, visit thegreenchain.com. For the Tyee, I'm Mark Laren Young.